So let's recite our lecture verse together. The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. So it's nice to have all of you here, both our local congregation and all the retreat guests, all the monks, everyone else, if you don't fall into one of those categories. This is our Festival of Remembrance for Veterans Day. It's traditional in Buddhism to honor the government that provides us with at least relative peace, and to be grateful for those who give their lives for that. At the same time, Buddhism is a religion of peace. Okay, and how does one balance those two aspects of practice? So what I want to talk about is contemplative practice, and then in general, and then we'll get to the specifics as we go along. So what does it mean to be contemplative? Our order is called the Order of Buddhist Contemplatives, and why is that? Contemplative has several different definitions, and we use the one that says dedicated to meditation. That kind of may seem obvious. So what you've learned this weekend, the retreat guests, and is we're not thinking about anything. We're not contemplating on something or contemplating a particular action. We're just contemplating. Okay, it's empty, sometimes said, or pure meditation. As Dogen said, it's neither trying to think nor trying not to think. Okay, it's something other than our conceptual mind that we're trying to touch. Okay, and this is just sitting. Zazen, we often call it. Za just means sitting, and Zen means meditation. So what we do is sitting meditation. It's also sometimes called shikantaza, which is kind of a longer Japanese word that means just sitting without doing anything else at all. Okay. All of you have learned this is not as easy as it sounds. Okay. Our abbess, Reverend Master Mayon, often says, simple but not easy. Okay, it's very simple in its instructions. You've been given all the secrets this weekend. Okay, now you just have to practice it. And that's where the real value of the practice comes into play, is by doing it regularly. No matter if it's just a small amount, try to do it regularly. Okay. When we use the word zazen, sometimes we're talking about actual seated formal meditation. But sometimes we're talking about taking that meditation into every aspect of daily life. And you've all had an opportunity to do that in what we call working meditation, helping in the kitchen or out in the garden or here in the sacristy, doing all sorts of things. To be contemplative is to put the meditation first, okay? Give that the top priority, and then let other things flow from that. Putting it first doesn't mean that you hop out of bed first thing in the morning and sit, okay? But you try to find some time in the morning to just be still, even if it's just for a minute or two. If you have a family, you know, if the alarm clock didn't go off, you know, there's all these, you know, conditions that can arise, but you can at least in your heart be still for a moment, okay, and then let your day flow from that. The reason I got onto this topic was I have a little card index that I did mainly when I was a younger monk, and I kind of indexed various words. Like, and so I was looking up war, which took me to peace. And so I found a quote that surprised me, but it's directly related to Zazen. And I'm reading from a commentary in a book called The Wholehearted Way. Okay, it's by Uchiyama Roshi. He was a Japanese teacher who had a great influence on the development of Zazen. I mentioned the book not because I expect you to remember, but it's like in an article I'm giving you my references. Okay. I don't mean it to sound stuffy and academic, but it's just I don't like to take credit for what isn't mine, okay? So I hope you can tell what's my words and what are the words of this teacher. In the Wholehearted Way, it's a commentary on the Bindowa, which Dogen wrote. Okay, great master Dogen's the founder of our tradition in Japan. In the ancestral line, he's listed as Eihei Koso, which was his honorary name. So in the ancestral line, if you wonder, well, where was Dogen? Okay, he was there, but under the name Eihei Dogen, or Eihei Koso. Eihei was the name of his mountain that he lived on. And the Bindowa is a series of questions and answers. Dogen wrote it. We think it might have been the questions that his first disciple had. You know, so it's kind of this disciple keeps asking questions and Dogen keeps answering. Okay. And this is toward the end. And Dogen writes, if the genuine Buddha Dharma permeates the country, because of the ceaseless protection of Buddhas and heavenly beings, the emperor's reign will be peaceful. We say, you know, if people practice, there'll be peace in our nation, in our world. This is Uchiyama's commentary. I agree. And yet, if we try to spread Buddha Dharma in order to pacify the world, the order will be turned upside down. This is what so-called new religions do in order to collect people. He's talking about various religions in Japan that arose after World War II. When Zazen practice permeates the world, meaningless conflicts may disappear. Consequently, peace may pervade the world. It may be possible, but such an effect is nothing other than a byproduct of Zazen. We should not put the cart before the horse. Such Zazen has nothing to do with Buddha Dharma. Zazen should be strictly good for nothing. It is vital to just practice this good-for-nothing practice. Okay? And what he's referring to there is what Dogen and other places calls the goal of goallessness. Okay? We try to practice Zazen without trying to gain anything, without trying to get anything or achieve any particular goal. That's why it's sometimes called empty, because it's, to the best of our ability, it's empty of self. We all have a self, but we're trying to relinquish our grip on it while we sit. And it's going to arise, and we try to endeavor to let it pass. Okay, it's not wrong to have a self. It's a useful fiction. Okay, but in the deepest sense, it's something that our mind creates in order to interact with the world. And there's something something deeper, there's something bigger. Some of you may have heard of Bodhidharma. This was an Indian monk who took this teaching from India to China. And so again, he was a real seminal person because he's the one who took it from one culture into another one. And the story goes that he ended up in China having an audience with the emperor. And the emperor was a very devout Buddhist and had been building temples and sponsoring translations and just doing all this stuff in support of Buddhism. And so he's asking Bodhidharma, well, how much merit have I gained? Okay. And Bodhidharma says, none. Because in Bodhidharma's pointing out the emperor was doing it with a goal in mind. The emperor was trying to get something. He was trying to get merit. So we try to do things just because they're good to do, not because we're trying to get something. This is what the Buddha referred to in the Second Noble Truth, that suffering is caused by desire. Okay. So this form of meditation undercuts that desire, okay, and helps our actions to be less selfish, unselfish. Okay. Empty of self always sounds kind of vague to me, but if you think of it as empty of selfishness or unselfishness, it makes a lot more sense, because we all know what selfishness is. We all recognize selfishness, whether it's within ourselves or within other people. And we can choose in our own daily life to not be that way. It may be a long project. But we all start, and we all move on it. And whether you take up this practice or do another practice, I hope you'll keep that in mind, okay? There's an opening of the heart that can occur when we do meditation or do some other form of practice. There's two ways of talking about ultimate matters, and these are kind of scholarly words, and you don't have to remember them. But one way is called apophatic. Okay, you say what something is by saying what it isn't. Okay, and this is how often Zen talks about things. We'll say because there's no self. And so forth down the line. We're trying, and it describes it by coming up with ways that doesn't let you hang on to anything. Okay? The other way is cataphatic, and that's what we use to say when something is. So when we're talking about ultimate matters, we can say it is great compassion. It is great wisdom. It is love. And Reverend Master G would often say, it is the cosmic Buddha. Okay? And that's the cosmic Buddha is a way of trying to describe in words what the ultimate matter is. And she would often tell us, and it's a parallel, or another way of saying Zazen is good for nothing. She would say, it is enough to know the cosmic Buddha. It is enough to know the cosmic Buddha. One of our monks recently told us at a gathering in England that she actually, now he said screamed, so I'm quoting him. She would scream at the monks, be content. Be content. Be content. Okay? This piece of art is found within yourself. Sometimes call it the Buddha nature. It's our inherent birthright. We can sometimes call it the true nature, okay, or original face. There's lots of ways of talking about it by describing it, but now none of those is going to be exactly right, so we all have to hold those words gently. And one of the lovely things about Reverend Master Chiu was she allowed us to call it whatever we wanted to. Okay, she didn't insist that we all call it the Cosmic Buddha. There was one monk who wasn't very much into iconography, so he called it that which is. The Buddha called it the unborn, the undying, uncreated, unchanging. Okay, we're pointing to that which doesn't change, that which it can be a true, real refuge within ourselves that we find through meditation. It's not a special state. You know, it's not a trance-like state. But what you'll find is by just bringing the mind back to the daily task that you're doing, by just bringing the mind back to just sitting, you'll find peace does begin to permeate your life. Okay? Meditation is a skill, okay? So it takes time to develop. You shouldn't expect to feel this right away, but you may have already. I don't know. It depends on what you were doing before you got here. Okay? But that peace can grow, and you can know it within the depths of your heart. Okay? You can, you know, at the end of the day, you can live without regrets. Now you can review your day and say, well, I did my best. I did my best. And what more can you do than your best? Maybe you could do better. But then you kind of vow or determine the next day to do a little better. But for this day, you did your best. Coming back to Bindowa, I'm reading now in Reverend Master Jeeves' translation in Zen's Eternal Life. Okay, this was her first book. There may be some copies offered as donations in the guest house, but it's online if you can't find it there. This was question 14. This disciple took a lot of convincing. Okay, he kept pushing Dogen. You know, kind of. Well, what about this and what about that? And so here he says, the questioner says, since the monks have no ties, there is nothing in the way of their practicing Zazen. But how can a busy layman do serious training in order to reach enlightenment? And Dogen answers, the gates of compassion have been opened wide by the Buddhas and ancestors out of their limitless love for all living things, whether they be humans or gods. There are innumerable examples right up from the beginning up to now. The state officials Tan Tsung and Sung Tsung were both extremely busy with affairs of government, but they penetrated the way of the Buddhas and ancestors through the practice of Zazen. The Prime Minister Li and the other Prime Minister Fang did the same thing at the same time as being the Emperor's counselors. Everything depends upon the will of the person involved and has nothing whatsoever to do with being either a lay trainee or a monk. The key sentence there is, it all depends upon the will of the person involved. It all depends on what your intention is. If you intend to meditate, you are meditating. It's just bringing that intention back into focus. Okay? A person who believes that worldly work is a hindrance to Buddhism knows only that no Buddhism exists in the world, for nothing whatsoever in Buddhism can be set apart as a worldly task. Okay. Reverend Master Ji used to use the phrase, sanctify the mundane. You know, find the Buddha nature in everything that you do. because it already has it. We just have to recognize it. Dogen continues on a little bit later. In China, even now, the emperor, ministers, soldiers, and people, both men and women, are interested in the way of the ancestors. Both warriors and scholars have the will to train themselves, and many will understand the truth. All these people's lives tell us clearly that worldly work is no hindrance whatsoever to Buddhism. So whatever you do can be practice. Okay, whatever you do, from the most mundane, humble task to a great position of responsibility and authority, everything can be the practice of Zazen. Again, we're using the word Zazen there in the more general sense of taking the spirit of the formal meditation, and actually the practice of the formal meditation, into daily life. Okay? I want to talk now a little bit about one of the invocations we did this morning called Simha's Question. Simha was a general at the time of the Buddha. I think that he was the general who converted to Buddhism from Jainism. Okay, and when he did, the Buddha said, yes, you can be my disciple, but you still have to support your old teachers. It shows the generosity of the Buddha and the tolerance of the Buddha and his caring for, you know, other teachers other than himself. Now, Mahavira, is that right? That may be his name, but that was the Buddha's competition. Okay, that was an alternative to what the Buddha was teaching, an alternative religious order. But the Buddha asked him to continue to support them. When we come to the question of war and peace, I think it's always find it really hard to talk about because it's easy to think about things in terms of but it's an and. Okay, Buddhism is a religion of peace. Okay, we work for peace. We work for peace by doing our zazen. The first ceremony and the last ceremony every day in the monastery is dedicated to world peace. Okay, so peace is constantly in our minds and hearts. We're trying to find that peace within and share it with other beings. Okay. At the same time, as I said earlier, we always honor those who have given their lives in service to the country. And we've widened the merit field of this ceremony over the years so that it includes soldiers of any war on any side. We have monks here whose parents or grandparents, I think, were part of the were in Germany and fought on the Germany side during the Second World War. Well, you know, we include them as well. You know. Some of us, I'm from the South, some of us were on the losing side of that war. Okay, my relatives still, you know, merit remembering. Okay, so we try not to put a political slant on the issue of war. You know, whoever gave their lives in battle for what they believed to be true, you know, we can honor that. They gave their lives. One of the monks who used to do this ceremony a lot told me once, he said, this is the hardest ceremony I do all year long because there's so much grief and confusion in the minds of the people that we're offering the merit to, those who have died in war. Okay, so we work for peace, and we comfort, support, help, minister to those who have been involved in war, whether it's through death, injury. Nowadays, there's psychological damage. We're recognizing it now of people who have been, well, in Vietnam, Afghanistan, Iraq. Okay. The Dharma is for everyone. The Buddha's teaching is for everyone. Now, in this invocation, the general's asking the Buddha, what is the karma of warfare? What is the karma of struggling? What is the karma for defending might? What is the burden of defending mind? Okay. And the Buddha said, there's another way. Okay. He said, there's karmic consequence for being a soldier. Okay. You can't get around that. Okay. But he said, you can still practice Zazen. And in the passage I just read from Dogen, you hear him. He's referring to warriors and soldiers and statesmen in China. Okay. That their responsibility didn't get in the way of their practicing Zazen, of finding a peaceful heart. I think they probably have, well, I don't know if it's a harder time or harder way, but I would think it'd be very hard to practice Zazen in those kind of positions. But what the Buddha's pointing to General Sima is, yes, if you're a soldier, there's karmic consequences. Okay, but don't do it out of hate. You know, don't do it out of ill will. Don't do it out of revenge. Because the killing that's done with those states of mind has a very different karmic consequence than just trying to do the right thing in, say, in a battle. Okay? So the Buddha says, who goes to battle, even though 'tis righteous, must be prepared for karmic destiny. Okay. River Master Ji taught us the same thing. She grew up was a young woman in England during World War II. And she survived the bombing of London. But she always, the rest of her life, thunder would set off this great anxiety and fear because she remembered the bombing of London, and it triggered this within herself. So she was always affected by the war in certain conditions. And she discovered later other people had the same reaction. As I said, she was a young woman, and she came to the decision that Hitler had to be stopped. Okay, that there was something actually quite evil about what Hitler was doing, and he had to be stopped. And so she chose to join the Royal Navy, the women's wing, whatever it's called. I don't think it's called WAVES in England, but the English equivalent. And so she was active in the military, and she was proud of that all her life, that she did that, because she felt she did the right thing. But she always would tell us, and there was karmic consequence for doing that. In my presence, at least, she never said what that karmic consequence was. I mean, some of the monks may have heard what she said, but she always pointed that out. There was karmic consequence. I took the karmic consequence of doing that. My own theory, and this is just my theory, is this may be why she encountered such hatred of foreigners when she went to Japan, because she was seen as the enemy, you know, the enemy who had dropped the atomic bomb. There was a lot of great resentment in Japan still at the time she was there. And she would try to explain, well, it was the Americans, it wasn't the British. But that didn't cut, yeah, that didn't make any difference. She was still viewed as the enemy. And so she had to trained with that kind of hatred and ill will that was directed to her because she was a foreigner. Okay? So the Buddha goes on saying, so free your mind from holds of fierce delusion. Otherwise, really work at clarifying your mind, you know, to Zazen. So yield your fears to great compassion pure. So free your heart from cruelty and illusion. So yield revenge to gratitude and peace. He doesn't tell the general that he should stop being a general. He doesn't criticize or judge the general for being a general and having that livelihood. He just tells him there's a way to do this. Okay, you can do Zazen. Okay, you can still find peace within your own heart, and it can be of benefit to you, even though you're a soldier. You know, even though you may have to order an army. Okay, make decisions that cause other people's harm. But just don't do it from hatred. Don't do it from the place of revenge. Okay. And then the Buddha encourages him to live each day the Noble Eightfold Way, the Eightfold Path. And then he talks about spiritually what goes on within the heart. Victory is won in bowing to Anicca. Anicca is impermanence, flux. It's the truth that everything is constantly changing. Okay, we can't do anything about that. That's sometimes called one of the three or four seals of in Buddhism. It's a seal on reality. If we read a description of something and it doesn't include that aspect of reality, we should question it, because everything is subject to that, what we call a law. Okay, a law of Anicca. Okay. Victory is conquering all the greeds of self. Okay. Again, selfishness. Okay. Victory is won in patiently enduring. You may have a very bitter pill to swallow. If you order the killing of other beings, there's going to be a hurt. You're going to feel some hurt and pain within yourself. And you're going to have to patiently endure that, okay, and face it and accept it. Then he ends with, victory is conquering all the fears of self, all the things that we're afraid of. It said that fear is the great generator of karma. If we look deeply enough, we may find that is true. Okay? We create karma, we break the precepts because we're afraid. Okay? Afraid of something. Okay? There's a saying, I haven't been able to find the source of this, but it keeps coming up in different contexts. Trainees whose mind is intent on the way. Trainees, us, whose minds are intent on practicing the way, with a capital W, the way, do not see conditions as separate from the way. No matter what condition we find ourselves in, we can take refuge in Zazen. Okay, we can take refuge in our meditation. No matter how horrible it is, we can still find that refuge. One other thing I'll mention, just because I think it's relevant, and I should have said it earlier, but I heard a little quote lately that's, I think, related to this question of, serving in the armed forces. This was something that I was told it was said by a Hindu teacher, and he used the word sin, which in Buddhism we don't have sin, but otherwise something that was harmful. And the teacher was saying, it is a sin to eat meat. Okay. But then he said, it's a greater sin to look down on those who do. Okay. So whatever our personal feelings are about this, don't judge. Keep an open heart. Because that's a greater breakage of the precepts. Okay. Our hearts have to be free of judgment. And that's something we can do something about. And I'll leave you with that. Thank you.